Chapter 17 Hearth and Home. Death does not discriminate. It is so even-handed, so scrupulously fair, that it seems not fair at all. Aeron Cleave, 10th Legion Iron Hands.
Tell me, I implore you, what was that?
Yutun asked the captain of the Precental Guard. Vodun Badorum shook his head. Mademoiselle, it is hard to say. Reports from the fortress are contradictory. Some say it is the Night Haunter unleashed upon the castrum. Others claim it is an entire host of Night Haunters. There are reports of attacks and incidents on every level of the fortress, and...
But you cannot tell me what that... But you cannot tell me what the blast was that shook these very walls? She snapped.
Badorum shook his head again. At his side, four of his precentals were urgently conducting conversations by Vox, trying to gather accurate intelligence from the fortress.
"Then I will trust my own eyes," Yutun announced and stood up abruptly.
Badorum had previously ordered her escorted into the private wing of the residency for safety, but now she marched straight across the outer hall to the head of the main staircase. He hurried after her, calling her name. The august Chamberlain Principal moved with surprising speed when she wanted to. Down below, at the foot of the staircase, warriors milled and waited. They looked up at her as she strode past. They were all Legiones Astartes, all castaway visitors to Macragg from the Shattered Legions. The lower halls of the residency had become their barracks. Like her, they awaited news.
"Mademoiselle, my lady," one called.
Yutun did not stop for him. She crossed the landing, opened the glazed doors to the west balcony, and stepped into the night. Badorum followed her. The night was especially dark. The pharos glowed frostily like a white lamp in fog. A swathe of black air hung across the great civitas below the wall. From the unlit balcony, in the cold night, they had a direct view to the Porta Hera and the cyclopean eastern ramparts of the fortress proper. Smoke, and in places flames, rose from the fortress at several locations. They were all dwarfed by the huge coil of underlit smoke belching from the inner part of the fortress into the night. It reminded Yutun of the great grumbling volcanoes in the far north of Macragg.
"Great darknesses," she whispered, that old Illyrian curse. "What has been done?"
"Mademoiselle, you must come inside," said Badorum.
"The Chapel of Memorial is burning, Vodun," she said, staring at the appalling view.
"I think perhaps so," said Badorum. "Or perhaps the Praetorium."
"It is the chapel," she insisted. She turned to look at him. "We must know something of what is transpiring in the fortress. Gilliman is in there."
"And the lion, too, both gone to hunt their fell brother who makes war on us tonight."
"War, mischief, dissent, terror," Yutun said, uttering each word as though she were spitting out pebbles. "The Night Haunter searches for one victim above all others, Ultramar. Macragge Civitas is the last stable, loyal place in the galaxy, Vodun. For our Lord has made it that way, steadfast when all else withers and fails. This is what curse has come to murder. Our peace, our faith, our fortitude."
"They will stop him," said Badorum.
"Will they? Or by dawn will there be panic and rioting in the streets of the city? Will terror reign and blight the hearts of the citizenry? Will Macragge catch a fire and blaze the last true stronghold? Lost?"
"No, my lady," he said. "Come, please. I fear it is not safe. Come, please, within."
Yutun allowed herself to be walked back into the residency.
"My lord has taken almost all the ultramarines on the castrum into the fortress with him, and he has in addition his noble brother and good strengths of Dark Angels legionaries. Furthermore, the gates and base of the wall are guarded to prevent access to the civitas."
"The monster cur has got in, Vodun. He can get out again, I expect."
"With every passing second, he has less and less surprise on his side, mademoiselle,"
Badoram replied. She stopped at the head of the staircase and looked down at the patiently waiting space marines. Salamanders, iron hands, raven guard, a white scar or two.
"What have we here, Voden?" she asked.
"My precentals hold the residency, ma'am," the commander replied. "Lord Gilliman's direct order. He made me pull my men back from the fortress."
"Because the precentals would be outclassed?"
"This hunt is a task for the Legiones Astartes, at the very least. It is no small thing to corner and kill a Primarch."
"We have not used our full resource," she said. She took a few steps down the staircase and addressed the waiting warriors. "My dear battle brothers, worthy souls, this night is a grim one, a darkness through which we must abide and come out whole together."
"We have come through much already, my lady," said one of the Iron Hands. "We have learned to endure. It is the steel in us."
Many of those around him nodded.
"Well spoken, Sardin Karashisan," Yutun said.
"We are yet in ignorance, lady," said a Raven Guard captain near to Karashisan. "We are merely obliged to wait, robbed of action and purpose."
Yutun nodded. This was a problem that had yet to be overcome. Since the light of the Pharos had been turned on Macragge, nigh on 1,000 souls had come to the city from the shattered legions of Istvan. They were sequestered in the residency and in several other barracks across the city. They were a resource of great potential, and their resolve and determination, having been witnesses to treason and atrocity, was beyond doubt. A way had not yet been found, however, to resolve them into one force. Gilliman had begun to find duties for some, as suited their specialisms, and it was, of course, straightforward to place Iron Hands with Iron Hands, and Raven Guard with Raven Guard, but to alloy them more permanently threw up problems of differences in legion practices and methods, of motivations and loyalties, of intentions and desires. Would the flesh-spare leaders of the Iron Hands form a command backbone to a force of survivors? Would the Raven Guard or the Salamanders be content to follow that? Could command be shared? Could orthodoxies be matched? Could the survivors be inducted as additional squads to the Ultramarines or the Dark Angels? As things stood, the shattered legions were hard to wield as one force. In an emergency such as the one that presently hung like a shroud across Macragge, they could not be deployed with unified effect, as could the Ultramarines or the Dark Angels. The question of it had vexed Gilliman. Yutun had seen him struggling to resolve the issue many times in the previous few days. "The individual character and characteristics of the legions is what invests them with their strengths and makes them wonders," he had said to her. "The idiosyncrasies of composition and method are precisely why there are 18 legions, rather than one legion, 18 times the size. But it is a weakness too, a mortal flaw, when it comes to forging them together as one. It makes one long for a formal, martial codification that would burnish away the rough edges, clean out the differences, and provide for a perfect, easy fit."
"I sympathize with your ignorance, Verano Ebb," said Yutun. "We all dwell in darkness this evening. I will tell you what I know, which is too little. Through guile and skill, and by exploiting the good faith of good men, Conrad Kurz has made a visitation to our city this day."
There was a general murmur of disquiet and anger. Badoram at Yutun's side held up a hand for quiet.
"To my best knowledge," the Chamberlain continued, "he is loose in the fortress, seeking to undermine the authority of Ultramar by breaking morale and the rule of law, and by magnifying hatred and fear."
"These were always his weapons," said an Iron Hands officer in mourning robes.
"They always were, Eiron Cleave," said Yutun with a solemn nod, "and they always shall be, until he is stopped or finished. My Lord Gilliman and the noble Lord of the Dark Angels are even now in the fortress hunting for him. I pity any man, any demigod even, who has the like of those two at his heels." Another general murmur filled the entryway, but this time it was more emphatic and eager. "I dare say," said Yuton, "that against a foe like the Night Haunter there is no such thing as too much help. If you can, go from here to the fortress and add your power to the hunt. But hear me well. Do not do this thing if you are not prepared to respect and follow the commands of Ultramarines or Dark Angels officers. The field is theirs tonight. Order and discipline must be maintained, especially against a foe whose singular purpose is to breed disorder and chaos. There is no room for pride or individual action, Battle Brothers. If you can obey and serve, then my lord will be glad of you."
"We will not abuse this trust, my lady," said Eron Cleave.
"Horus, cursed be his name, has done one good deed in this great treachery," said Verano Ebb. "He has made the greatest and truest sworn comrades of those he has wounded."
"It gladdens my heart to hear it on this cold night, sirs," said Yuton. "As Chamberlain Principal, I own the full authority of the Lord of Ultramar in his absence, so with that power and pitch of command, I charge you all to go from here to the gates of the fortress and make perfect war upon the Night Haunter. Serve Gilliman, serve the Lion, and serve Macragge. Let no disobedience weaken this endeavour. May your blades, before dawn comes, run wet with traitor blood."
The gathered legionaries, all looking up at her, made immediate salute, crashing mailed fists against their breastplates.
"We march for Macragge," declared Timur Gantulga.
It was odd to hear the cry uttered in a strong Chagorian accent, but in an instant the declaration was echoed with vigour by his fellow White Scars, and then by every battle brother in the hall. The war cry of Ultramar was coloured and invested by the accents of cold-hearted Medusa, of lofty Deliverance, of feral Fenris, of fire-forged Nocturne, of glacial Inwit, and distant Holy Terror.
"My lord Badorum," said Yuton, turning to him, "make it known by my seal and authority, via all channels, that this force of warriors is coming to the fortress to render aid. Have the gates opened for them, and have them admitted and assigned without delay. Let us not waste this intent."
"At once," he assured her.
"And Badorum," Yuton added, "make sure my lord Gilliman personally knows that I am sending this strength. Tell him they are of one resolve and ready for his command."
"I will," he said.
He had neither the heart nor the words to tell her that since the blast that had ripped through the Chapel of Memorial 10 minutes past, no contact had been made with Gilliman or the Lion at all.
"Garad!"
The fief commander of the bodyguard turned his massive armoured form and saw Titus Prato approaching him. Prato was limping and clutched a deep and bloody injury to his side.
"Tell me," said Prato. "I tell you squarely, Prato," rumbled the cataphracty, "I am a man of no honour. I have failed in my duty. My oath was to protect him, and I have not done so."
He looked at the master of the Librarius.
"Gilliman is dead," Gorod said. "So too the worthy Lion."
Behind them, across the courtyard, the great Chapel of Memorial was blazing in the night. Its roof and upper walls had collapsed. The heat was so intense that even armoured legionaries had been driven back while rescue crews were summoned.
"No," said Prato. "I may wish on every minute of every day for the rest of my life that it was not a truth to be spoken," said Gorod. "But it is plain. Kurz has struck the foulest blow of all. He rigged the chapel and made it so that our lord and the Lion found him there. Kurz was bait in his own trap. He has murdered our master and with him the noble king of Caliban. I only hope that this crime has cost him his life."
"No," Prato repeated.
"Why do you refute me?" asked Gorod. "With my own eyes." Dracus, said Prato, I have perhaps, at penalty to my own soundness of thought, touched the mind of Conrad Kurz. He showed it to me so that I might know the nightmares that live there and be driven mad. Dracus, listen. I feel it still, still in my head.
Wincing and drawing sharp breath as he moved, Prato looked around.
Kurz lives, and if he escaped this conflagration, then so could better men.
He knew what was coming. He planned his exit.
If Lord Gilliman had died, Dracus, I swear I would have felt that too. He trusts me and lets me wait at his shoulder. I would have felt the instant of his annihilation.
Then I do not know how or where he lives, said Gorod. Forgive me, brother, but you have taken a great wound. I wondered if your perceptions are as sharp as they might be.
In this they are.
Farith Redlos approached them. The Dreadwing commander showed no expression in his face. A signal has come, of reinforcements sent from the Residency. You are to open the western gates. There is no trace of Kurz, nor of... His voice fell away, wordless.
Master Prato declares them all living, said Gorod, despite the evidence of this inferno.
Then, Master Prato gladdens my heart. You have hard proof, brother?
I have my mind, said Prato. We must find them. Indeed, we must find Kurz in particular. If he is still at liberty, then he will use this great confusion to sow greater woes. Let us open the gates, bring in the reinforcements, and lock the fortress down entirely. I will attempt to focus. Perhaps, with the aid of other librarians, I can locate the villain in the darkness.
You need attention, said Gorod. That wound must be dressed and bound. You should go to the Medicaid Hall at once.
The Medicaid Hall has suffered attack too, said Farith Redlos. I heard that it was sealed while the trouble was contained.
Wait, said Prato. Kurz struck all over the fortress, but the Residency too? So far, I had not heard of his axe extending beyond the precinct of the fortress.
I say only what I have heard, said Farith Redlos.
Are we haunted by more than one foe tonight? Asked Gorod.
Let us concentrate on the one we know about, said Titus Prato.
The eastern gates of the fortress rumbled open, letting the stench of fire and smoke out into the cold night air. Attending without on the pavements and colonnades that linked the Residency to the fortress, the battle brothers of the Shattered Legions roused and moved inside. Nyax Nessus awaited them, with senior officers of his legion and the Dark Angels.
"We are glad of your arms," Nessus said directly. "Confusion is our enemy. We have good reason to believe that the Night Haunter is still active within the bounds of the fortress. He must be found. You will divide into search squads and pair each squad with a team of Ultramarines or Dark Angels. You will move in concert, watch each other's backs, and confirm each other's sweeps."
"I have assigned areas," said Holguin.
The Dark Angel had, it was clear, taken an almost crippling blow in combat. His determination to proceed was inspiring.
"Brothers, Kurz is evil and cunning manifest. At any sighting, sound the warning, stay in formation and maintain discipline. He has devoured too many good lives tonight by declaring misrule and disarray."
"He is a killer, right enough," Nessus agreed. "Take no chances with your lives or the lives of the brothers around you."
Ultramarines officers moved forward and began marshalling the reinforcement force.
"I have studied his art,"
Gantulga said to Cleave as they awaited assignment.
"His art? Little is written of the Night Lord's methods, but what is recorded is stimulating."
The White Scar paused.
"He fancies himself a hunter, a stalker of prey. That is how he styles himself, at least. But it..."
"What, friend?" asked Cleave.
"It is not convincing. I say that as a hunter myself, and as one who knows hunters. What I have seen so far of his work in the fortress, it is expertise of a sort, but it is not hunting.
His design is to spread terror and disruption, said Cleve.
And to wound and to punish, Gantulga said. He risks himself. He places himself at great jeopardy to strike these blows, as though he cares not for his own fate.
He paused and looked back along the gatehouse to where the sentries were preparing to close and bar the eastern gates. The night outside, framed by the massive gate arch, was as cold, black, and unfathomable as darkened glass.
"Unless," he murmured, "unless, Aeron Cleave, he is a hunter at heart."
"What do you mean, Gantulga?"
"A hunter takes risks," said the White Scar, "but never excessive ones. He always protects himself so that he may hunt again. A wolf stalks a herd and perhaps causes panic, so the herdsmen drive the animals into a tight fold and pen them. Does the wolf persist? No, it is too open, too exposed. The herdsmen are alert, and they have gathered in numbers. To try to take from the fold would draw down their slingshots and arrows. That is an unacceptable and unnecessary risk for a hunter. So, while the herdsmen are occupied guarding the herd, the wolf turns to where they are not. The larder, the granary, the stables, the bird cages."
Gantulga turned abruptly and hurried towards the closing gates.
"What are you doing?" Cleve called after him, starting to follow. The Chamberlain was quite specific. "This is no time for individual action or improvisation. We are here only if we conform to discipline and command. Gantulga, we have a duty!"
The White Scar turned and looked back at the Iron Hands legionary for a second.
"We do," he said, "but he's not here. We are here, all of us, circling the herd. He has done what he can, but it is too dangerous for him to be here. There are too many of us, so he has gone where we are not."
"The residency," said Cleve, understanding.
"The residency," Gantulga agreed.
He found a hall. It was unlit. It was a private place. His eyes saw all the details, despite the darkness. This was a room for trophies and keepsakes, a room where a proud man kept the relics and reminders of his career, books, charts, coats of armour, weapons. This was not merely a man, though. Even in its raving delirium, his mind recognized that. This was more than a man. This was a master of worlds, a demigod. Here hung blades of great scale, falchions and broadswords, powered glaives and hooked axes. Here were suits of plate and war gear mastercrafted for state occasions. Here were the scrapes and notches of their service. Here were mantles and cloaks, robes and banners, the raiments and decorations of kingship. He reached out with bloody hands. The enemy was close. He needed to be ready.
"Hello?"
There was no one there. Yutun paused and then shook her head. Her nerves were taut. She was jumping at shadows. She had retired to Gilliman's withdrawing chamber, so recently refurbished and repaired that it seemed half empty. So many items needed to be replaced, and so very many never could. The walls were bare of paintings. The newly installed Cognisignum cogitator device purred softly and seemed cold and clinical compared to the ancient machine it had replaced. She poured herself a drink, a small Amasek. The night was bleak outside the windows, cut only by the baleful glow of the Pharos. She tried to ignore the way the low clouds were side-lit and ruddy from the fires in the fortress. She sat, but could not settle. Setting down her glass, she went to the chamber doors. An officer of the Precental Guard stood guard outside. "My lady?"
"I am bothered, Purcell," she said. "Is there really still no word from our Lord Gilliman? Please, good sir, it has been over long."
"I will check again, my lady," the officer replied. Yuton went back into the room and resumed her seat. Her drink remained untouched. She tapped her fingers on her knee. Her back ached. Her joints were sore. How miserable it was to be human and old. No matter the sciences that prolonged the mortal span. Yuton resented the way that her life and capabilities were slowing down. Oh, to be transhuman in measure, to be so strong, to possess such vitality. "The day is not far off," she thought, "when I will be of no more use to him, when I will need to be cared for like a child, and my part in his life will finally be over. Soon thereafter I will be gone from this vale altogether. Have I done enough for him? I have stayed the course, stayed it well, from the days of Conor to this dark night. Surely I can serve him yet." A noise. Was that a knock at the chamber door? "Come," she called out. No one came. A cloud passed across the solitary star, briefly. Why was there still no word from the fortress? Yuton rose and crossed to the door. "Purcell?" There was no one in the hall. Glow globes sizzled softly in their sconces. "He is gone, as I ordered," she decided. "He is gone to seek word." The chamberlain went back into the room. She felt that she might fidget herself to death with nervous energy. She felt great agitation. It was ridiculous to be so in a well-lit chamber, in a fortress palace guarded by the best soldiers in Ultramar. She froze. The name was written plainly on the wall. It had not been there when she had gone to the door. It was there now. Rabute. It was written, and Yuton knew this, even though she knew not how she knew it, in the still warm blood of Officer Purcell. Horror clenched her. It drove the air from her lungs and the power from her voice. Her heart had never beaten so fast. On the desk there was a switch for the alarm. It seemed to be leagues away from her. She turned slowly, turned in a full circle, waiting to set eyes upon the grinning thing that she knew must be waiting behind her. There was nothing there. Nothing. Nothing. Yet the letters of her master's name still trickled red down the wall. "Who is here?" she hissed. No answer. "Who? Who is here?" Nothing. She looked around, hunting for detail. That name daubed across the wall. "I am not afraid of you," she said. "I am August Chamberlain Principal of the 500 Worlds, and damaged fiends like you do not frighten me. Show yourself. Be a man and confront me. I dare you." What other details had changed while she had gone to the door? Her glass. Her glass. It still sat where she had set it upon the side table, but it was no longer full of Amasek. The spirit had gone. The glass was filled with blood. Terror touched her heart. She could not fight it. Its fingers were like ice. Like a child, she fell to the floor and scrambled behind the nearest piece of furniture, staying low, crawling into shadows. Maybe she could hide. Maybe she could... Officer Purcell was waiting for her beneath the sofa. His severed head, at least. His eyes were glazed, his mouth was half open as if in the middle of some great and dismaying surprise. He stared back at her from between the sofa's elegant bluewood feet. Yuton recoiled. There was someone standing over her, right behind her. His shadow fell across her. He was huge,
silent and powerful, and he stank of blood and war. She wanted to ask him, beg him to make it quick, but her voice would not come out at all. He put a massive hand on her shoulder. She flinched.
"He's here," the shadow said. "Stay down."
She turned and looked up. Axe raised, alert, Fafner Bloodbroder stood over her.
"You stayed," she whispered.
"We don't leave the hearth," he replied.
He looked down at her.
"Stay down. Run when I tell you. I will protect you with every drop of my blood."
Still cowering, Yutun looked around. As silent as falling snow, the other savage members of Fafner's pack were creeping into the chamber, weapons ready, ears pricked for any sound or motion. Their silence was extraordinary. They padded like wolves on snow. Fafner sighed.
"Now we have it," he said.
Conrad Kurz came out of somewhere. It was not exactly clear where. It might have been a shadow or a fold of drapery or even merely a tiny crack in the wall. He manifested. He was monstrously vast, a black shadow, power claws unfurled like the flight feathers of a raven. His hair was a halo of filth. His mouth was impossibly large, a yawning, blackened maw that stretched the thin white flesh of his angular skull as though it would split it. His right cheek was slashed to the bone and clotted with dark blood. The wolves went for him without hesitation. Their blades were thirsty. Only Fafner stayed his place, loyal Fafner, covering her, defending her with his blade and body.
"Run now," he told her.
"I can't run," she said, barely able to get up.
"Hjolt, you'll damn well run if I tell you to run, female."
A blur. Bo Sorin swung his axe, but it was stopped dead by curved talons. Shockeye Finn lunged with his longsword, but cut only smoke. Gudsen Alfreyr came at the beast, but was smashed aside, spitting blood and broken teeth. Mads Loresen tried to swing, but was blocked by the reeling Alfreyr. A Primarch, a squad of the Legiones Astartes, one locked room. The same locked room. How would history repeat itself? How would it be revised? The wolves were the Emperor's executioners, but Kurz, Malmer Longreach, spear thrusting, and Salik the Braided, axe low, attacked together. One struck home, for blood spattered the floor and the furniture around Yutun, but both were knocked aside. Kuro came in, Biter Herrick, then Nido Knifeson. Blades hammered off armour and drew flinty sparks from whirling claws. Kurz grabbed Salik by the throat and threw him across the chamber into the wall. Biter Herrick buried his axe in the depths of Kurz's darkness. Blood sprayed. Mads Loresen went down on one knee, clutching at his torn throat, trying to stem the blood gushing from it. Kuro Jordrofk sailed across the chamber and demolished a chair and table as he landed. Kurz was laughing. His pale, harlequin face was split by a maniacal grin of delight in bloodshed. He threw Shockeye Finn through the chamber windows, which detonated as one sheet like a glass bomb. He kicked Biter Herrick to the ground and cracked his skull with a vicious, armoured, driving elbow. He took Goodson's sword away, broke it across the wolf's back, then drove the broken blade into Bo Sorin's cheek. Malmor grappled with him and Nido Knifeson joined him. Both were cast aside, bones snapping and armour cracking.
"I told you to run," Fafner said.
"I'm sorry," Yutun replied.
"Last chance," he said, raising his axe and rushing the Night Haunter.
Yutun found her feet. She got up and tried to run. A wolf, bleeding and writhing, lay in her path, another to her left, and a third against the wall who appeared dead. The doors were close. Something flew over her, a huge thing. It hit the doors ahead of her and smashed them down entirely.
It was Fafner Bloodbroder.
The pack leader lay in the wreckage of the doors and did not rise. Yutun stopped. She turned. Conrad Kurz bowed to her.
He was a smile made of shadows and smoke and sickness. He was wickedness itself.
Tarasha, he sighed.
A smile should not be that wide.
He will kill you for this, she said.
He's dead, Tarasha, Kurz replied.
All her strength left her. Grief felled her. She dropped to her knees.
No,
I killed him, Kurz cooed. Rabute and the lion both. I have studied his story, of course. As the little emperor he pretends to be, he does so chronicle himself. I have heard of you, Tarasha Yutan, Chamberlain Principal, and to all intents a mother to him. A mother.
Kurz sighed.
Thanks to the genius of my father, my kind does not enjoy the luxury of mothers. You are rare. You are a rare and obscene thing, you ragged witch. I wish Rabute had been alive to suffer the damage of your death.
Yutan rose to her full height and looked the monster in the eye.
Go to hell, you bastard, she said.
Kurz drew back his claws. Something entered the room. It entered with great speed and force. Yutan felt the rush of it, the shock wave. She recoiled, reeling, stunned. Suddenly, her killer was no longer in front of her. Kurz was being driven towards the exploded window by an elemental force. It was clad in mismatched armor plate and mail, all purloined from Gilliman's trophy hall, armor built to fit a Primarch's scale. It wielded a battle mace, a fine piece that Rabute had used early in the Great Crusade. The elemental force, raging and screaming, its skin sheened with blood, smashed Kurz backwards and drove the mace into his slender chest. The elemental force had a name, though it did not know it or remember it. That name was Vulcan. Locked together, he and Kurz tumbled out of the chamber windows and into the precipitous gloom beyond.